I would believe their testimony against yours, sir, if they told me the sky was green. And it would appear that, untrained as they are, they have bested some of Slovenia's finest soldiers by wit and daring. I have every confidence that they have further surprises in store for us.
Dropping your drawers would do it, whispered Maledict.
Shut up, hissed Polly, and then had to cram a fist into her mouth again.
I know you, Captain Horrence, said Blouse,
and just for a moment the captain looked worried.
I mean, I know your sort. I have had to put up with you all my life. Big, jovial bullies with your brains in your breeches. You dare to come riding into our country and think we're going to be frightened of you? You think you can appeal to me over the heads of my men? You demand, on the soil of my country?
Captain,
murmured the cavalry sergeant, as Horrence stared open-mouthed at the lieutenant.
They'll be here soon.
Ah,
said Horrence uncertainly. Then he seemed with some effort to regain his composure.
Reinforcements are coming, he snapped. Free us now, you idiot, and I might just put this down to native stupidity. Otherwise I shall see to it that things go very, very badly for you and your men.
7 cavalrymen were considered not enough to deal with farm boys, said Blouse. You're sweating, Captain. You are worried. And yet you have reinforcements coming.
Permission to speak, sir, barked Jackram, and went straight on to, Cheesemongers, get bleeding armed again right now. Maledict, you give Private Goom his sword back and wish him luck. Carborundum, you grab a handful of them 12-foot pikes. The rest of...
There is these as well, Sarge, said Maledict. Lots of them. I got them off our friends' saddles.
He held up what looked to Polly like a couple of large pistol crossbows, steely and sleek.
Horse bows, said Jackram,
like a child opening a wonderful hogswatch present.
That's what you get for leading a honest and sober life, my lads. Dreadful little engines they are. Let's have 2 each.
I don't want unnecessary violence, sergeant, said Blouse.
Right you are, sir, said the sergeant. Carborundum, first man comes through that door running, I want him nailed to the pub wall.
He caught the lieutenant's eye and added,
but not too hard.
And someone did knock at the door. Maledict levelled 2 bows at it. Carborundum lifted a couple of pikes in either hand. Polly raised her cudgel, a weapon she at least knew how to use. The other boys, and girls, raised whatever weapon 3-part Scallet had been able to procure. There was silence. Polly looked around. Come in, she suggested.
Yeah, right, that should do it,
said Jackram, rolling his eyes. The door was pushed open, and a small, dapper man stepped through carefully. In build, colouring, and hairstyle, he looked rather like
A vampire, said Polly softly.
Oh, damn, said Maledict. The newcomer's clothing, however, was unusual. It was an old-fashioned evening dress coat, with the sleeves removed and many, many pockets sewn all over it. In front of him, slung around his neck, was a large black box. Against all common sense, he beamed at the sight of 12 weapons poised to deliver perforated death.
Wonderful,
he said, lifting up the box and unfolding 3 legs to form a tripod for it.
But could the troll move a little to his left, please?
Huh?
Said Carborundum. The squad looked at one another.
Yes, and if the sergeant would be so kind as to move into the centre more, and raise those swords a little bit higher, the vampire went on. Great! And you, sir, if you could give me a grr.
Grr? Said Blouse.
Very good, really fierce now.
There was a blinding flash and a brief cry of, Oh, shit! Followed by the tinkle of breaking glass. Where the vampire had been standing was a little cone of dust. Blinking, Polly watched it fountain up into a human shape that coalesced once more into the vampire.
Oh, dear, I really thought the new filter would do it, he said. Oh, well, we live and learn.
He gave them a bright smile and added,
Now, which one of you is Captain Horrence, please?
1/2 an hour had passed. Polly was still bewildered. The trouble was not that she didn't understand what was going on. The trouble was that before she could understand that, she had to understand a lot of other things. One of them was the concept of a newspaper. Blouse was looking proud and worried by turns, but nervous all the time. Polly watched him carefully, not least because he was talking to the man who had come in with the iconographer. He wore a big leather coat and jodhpurs, and spent most of his time writing things down in a notebook, with occasional puzzled glances at the squad. Finally, Maledict, who had good hearing, sauntered over to the recruits from his lounging spot by the wall.
"Okay," he said, lowering his voice. "It's all a bit complicated, but do any of you know about newspapers?"
"Yes, my second cousin Igor in Ankh-Morpork. Tell me about them," said Igor. "They're like a kind of government announcement."
"Sort of. Except they are not written by the government. They are written by ordinary people who write things down," said Maledict.
"Like a diary?" said Tonka.
No.
Maledict tried to explain. The squad tried to understand. It still made no sense. It sounded to Polly like some kind of Punch and Judy show. Anyway, why would you trust anything written down? She certainly didn't trust Mothers of Borogravia, and that was from the government. And if you couldn't trust the government, who could you trust? Very nearly everyone, come to think of it.
"Mr. Derwood works for a newspaper in Ankh-Morpork," said Maledict. "He says we're losing. He says casualties are mounting and troops are deserting, and all the civilians are heading for the mountains."
Why should we believe him?" Wasser demanded.
"Well, we've seen a lot of casualties and refugees, and Corporal Strappy hasn't been around since he heard he was going to the front," said Maledict. "Sorry, but it's true. We've all seen it."
"Yeah, but he's just some man from a foreign country. Why would the Duchess lie to us? I mean, why would she send us out just to die?" said Wazza. "She watches over us."
"Everyone says we're winning,"
said Tonka doubtfully, after that moment of embarrassment. Tears were running down Wazza's face.
"No, they don't," said Polly. "I don't think we are either."
"Does anyone think we are?" said Maledict.
Polly looked from face to face.
"Saying so, it's like treachery against the Duchess, isn't it?"
said Wazza.
"It's spreading alarm and despondency, isn't it?"
"Maybe we ought to be alarmed," said Maledict. "Do you know how he came to be here? He travels around writing things down about the war for his paper of news. He met those cavalry just up the road, in our country. And they told him they'd just heard that the very last recruits from Borogravia were here, and they were nothing but, a wet little bunch of squeaking boys. They said they'd capture us for our own good, and he could get a picture of us for his paper. He could show everybody how dreadful things were, they said, because we were scraping the bottom of the barrel."
"Yeah, but we beat them, so that's foxed him," said Tonka, grinning nastily. "Nothing for him to write down now, eh?"
Not really. He says that this is even better."
"Better? Whose side is he on?"
"Bit of a puzzler, really. He comes from Ankh-Morpork, but he's not exactly on their side. Otto Hrieck, who makes the pictures for him."
"The vampire? He crumbled to dust when the light flashed," said Polly. "And then he came back."
"Well, I was standing behind Carborundum at the time," said Maledict, "but I know the technique. He probably carries a thin glass vial of blood,
he sighed.
"There, no problem. A thin vial of what I said, which smashed on the ground and brought the dust back to life again. It's a great idea."
Maledict gave them a wan smile.
"I think he really cares a lot about what he does, you know. Anyway, he told me Mr. Derwood just tries to find out the truth, and then he writes it down and sells it to anyone who wants it."
"And people let him do that?" said Polly.
"Apparently. Otto says he makes Commander Vimes livid with rage about once a week, but nothing ever happens."
"Vimes? The butcher?"
said Polly.
"He's a duke, Otto says, but not like ours. Otto says he's never seen him butcher anybody. Otto's a black ribboner like me. He wouldn't lie to a fellow ribboner. And he says that picture he took is going on the clacks from the nearest tower tonight. It will be in the paper of news tomorrow, and they print a copy here."
"How can you send a picture on the clacks?" said Polly. "I know people who've seen them. It's just a lot of boxes on a tower that go clack-clack."
"Ah, Otto explained that to me too," said Benedict. "It's very ingenious."
"How does it work, then?"
"Oh, I didn't understand what he said. It was all about numbers. But it certainly sounded very clever. Anyway, the word just told the Lou, the Rupert, that news about a bunch of boys beating up experienced soldiers would certainly make people sit up and take notice."
The squad looked at one another sheepishly.
"It was a bit of a fluke, and anyway we had carborundum," said Tonka.
"And I used trickery," said Polly. "I mean, I couldn't do it twice."
"So what?" said Benedict. "We did it. The squad did it. The next time we'll do it differently."
"Yeah," said Tonka.
And there was a shared moment of exhilaration in which they were capable of anything. It lasted all of a moment.
"But it won't work," said Shifty. "We've just been lucky. You know it won't work, Benedict. You all know it won't work, right?"
"Well, I'm not saying we could, you know, take on a regiment all at once," said Benedict. "And the Lou Rupert might be a bit wet, but we could help make a difference. Old Jackram knows what he's doing."
"Upon my oath, I am not a violent man.
Whack!" sniggered Tonka.
And there were a few, yes, giggles. They were giggles, Polly knew, from the squad.
"No, you're not," said Shifty flatly. "None of us are, right? Because we're girls."
There was a dead silence.
"Well, not carborundum and ozzer, okay,"
Shifty went on, as if the silence was sucking unwilling words out of her.
"And I'm not sure about Maledict and Igor, but I know the rest of us are, right? I've got eyes, I've got ears, I've got a brain, right?"
In the silence, there was a slow rumble that preceded a pronouncement from carborundum.
"If it any help,"
she said, in a voice suddenly more sandy than gravelly,
"my real name's Jade."
Polly felt questing eyes boring into her. She was embarrassed, of course, but not for the obvious reason. It was for the other one, the little lesson that life sometimes rams home with a stick. You are not the only one watching the world. Other people are also people. While you watch them, they watch you. And they think about you while you think about them. The world isn't just about you. There was going to be no possibility of getting out of this. And, in a way, it was a relief.
"Polly,"
she said, almost in a whisper. She looked questioningly at Benedict, who smiled in a distinctly non-committal way.
"Is this the time?" he said. "All right, you lot, what are you standing about for?"
bawled Jackram, 6 inches from the back of Maledict's head. No one saw him arrive there. He moved with an NCO's stealth, which sometimes mystifies even Igor's. Maledict's smile didn't change.
"Why, we're awaiting your orders, Sergeant," he said, turning around. "Do you think you're clever, Benedict?"
Yes, Sarge, quite clever,"
the vampire conceded. There wasn't a lot of humour in Jackram's smile.
"Good. Glad to hear it. Don't want another stupid corporal. Yeah, I know you ain't even a proper private yet, but glory be, you're a corporal now, because I need one and you're the snappiest dresser. Get some stripes from Three Parts. The rest of you, this isn't a bleeding mother's meeting. We're leaving in 5 minutes. Move."
"But the prisoners, Sarge,"
Polly began, still trying to digest the revelation.
"We're going to drag him over to the inn and leave him tied up in the nude and shackled together," said Jackram. "Vicious little devil when he's roused, our Rupert, eh? And Three Parts is having their boots and horses. They won't be going too far for a while. Not in the nude."
"Won't the writing man let them out?" said Tonka.
"Don't care," said Jackram. "He could probably cut the ropes, but I'm dropping the shackle key in the privy, and that'll take a bit of fishing out."
"Whose side is he on, Sarge?" said Polly.
"Dunno. I don't trust him. Ignore him. Don't talk to him. Never talk to people who write things down. Military rule. Now, I know I just gave you lot an order, because I heard the bleeding echo. Get on with it. We are leaving." "Road to perdition, lad. Promotion," said Scallop to Benedict, swinging up with two stripes hanging from his hook.
He grinned.
"That's 3 pence extra a day you're due now, only you won't get it, because they ain't paying us," But, to look on the bright side, you won't get any stoppages, and they're a devil for stoppages. The way I see it, march backwards and your pockets will overflow.
The rain had stopped. Most of the squad were parading outside the barracks, where there was now a small covered wagon belonging to the writer of the paper of news. A large flag hung from a pole attached to it, but Polly couldn't make out the design by moonlight. Beside the wagon, Maledict was deep in conversation with Otto. The centre of attention, though, was the line of cavalry horses. One had been offered to Blouse, but he'd waved it away with a look of alarm, and muttering something about being loyal to his steed, which to Polly's eye looked like a self-propelled toast rack with a bad attitude. But he'd probably made the right decision at that, because they were big beasts, broad, battle-hardened and bright-eyed. Sitting astride one of them would have strained the crotch in Blouse's trousers, and an attempt at reining one of them in would have pulled his arms off at the shoulder. Now each horse had a pair of boots hanging from its saddle, except for the leading horse, a truly magnificent beast, upon which Corporal Scallet sat like an afterthought.
"I'm no donkey walloper, as you know, Three Parts," said Jackram, as he finished lashing the crutches behind the saddle, "but this is a hell of a good horse you've got here." "Damn right, Sarge. You could feed a platoon for a week off of it," said the corporal. "Sure you won't come with us?" Jackram added, standing back. "I reckon you still must have one or two things left for the bastards to cut off, eh?" "Thank you, Sarge, it's a kind offer," said Three Parts. "But fast horses are going to be at a real premium soon, and I'll be in on the ground floor, as you might say. This lot'll be worth 3 years' pay." He turned in the saddle and nodded at the squad. "Best of luck, lads," he added cheerfully. "You'll walk with death every day, but I've seen him, and he's been known to wink. And remember, fill your boots with soup."
He urged the horses into a walk, and disappeared with his trophies into the gloom. Jackram watched him go, shook his head, and turned to the recruits.
"All right, ladies, what's funny, Private Holter?"
"And nothing, Sarge. I just thought of something," said Tonka, almost choking.
"You ain't paid to think of things. You're paid to march. Do it!"
The squad marched away. The rain slackened to nothing, but the wind rose a little, rattling windows, blowing through the deserted houses, opening and shutting doors like someone looking for something they could have sworn they put down here only a moment ago. That was all that moved in plots, except for one candle flame down near the floor in the back room of the deserted barracks. The candle had been tilted so that it leaned against a cotton thread fastened between the legs of a stool. This meant that when the candle burned low enough, it would burn through the thread, and fall all the way to the floor and into a ragged trail of straw that led to a pile of palliasses, on which had been stood two ancient cans of lamp oil. It took about an hour, in the wet, dejected night, for this to happen, and then all the windows blew out. Tomorrow dawned on Borogravia like a great big fish. A pigeon rose over the forests, banked slightly, and headed straight for the valley of the Knek. Even from here, the black stone bulk of the keep was visible, rising above the sea of trees. The pigeon sped on, one spark of purpose in the fresh new morning, and squawked as darkness dropped from the sky, gripping it in talons of steel. Buzzard and pigeon tumbled for a moment, and then the buzzard gained a little height and flapped onwards. The pigeon thought, but had it been more capable of coherent thought, and knew something about how birds of prey catch pigeons, and allowing for the fact that all pigeons who know how birds of prey catch are dead, and therefore capable of slightly less thought than a living pigeon, it might have wondered why it was being gripped so kindly. It was being held, not squeezed. As it was, all it could think was, The buzzard reached the valley and began to circle low over the keep. As it gyred, a tiny figure detached itself from the leather harness on its back, and with great care inched itself around the body and down to the talons. It reached the imprisoned pigeon, knelt on it, and put its arms around the bird's neck. The buzzard skimmed low over a stone balcony, reared in the air, and let the pigeon go. Bird and tiny man rolled and bounced across the flagstone in a trail of feathers and lay still. Eventually, a voice from somewhere under the pigeon said, "Bugger!" Urgent footsteps ran across the stones, and the pigeon was lifted off Corporal Buggy Swires. He was a gnome and barely 6 inches tall. On the other hand, as the head and only member of Ankh-Morpork City Watch's airborne section, he spent most of his time so high that everyone looked small.
"Are you all right, Buggy?" said Commander Vimes.
"Not too bad, sir," said Buggy, spitting out a feather. "But it wasn't elegant, was it? I'll do better next time. Trouble is, pigeons are too stupid to be steered."
"What have you got me?"
"The Times sent this up from their cat, sir. I tracked it all the way."
"Well done, Buggy."
There was a flurry of wings, and the buzzard landed on the battlements.
"And, what is his name?" Vimes added.
The buzzard gave him the mad, distant look of all birds.
"She's Morag, sir. Trained by the Pixies. Wonderful bird."
"Was she the one we paid a crate of whiskey for?"
"Yes, sir. And worth every dram."
The pigeon struggled in Vimes's hand.
"You wait there, then, Buggy, and I'll get Reg to come out with some raw rabbit," he said,
and walked into his tower. Sergeant Angua was waiting by his desk, reading the Living Testament of Nuggan. "Is that a carrier pigeon, sir?" she said as Vimes sat down.
"No," said Vimes. "Hold it a minute, will you? I want to have a look inside the message capsule."
"It does look like a carrier pigeon," said Angua, putting down the book.
"Ah, but messages flying through the air are an abomination unto Nuggan," said Vimes. "The prayers of the faithful bounce off them, apparently. No, I think I've found someone's lost pet, and I'm looking in this little tube here to see if I can find the owner's name and address, because I'm a kind man."
"So you are not actually waylaying field reports from the Times, then, sir?" said Angua, grinning.
"Not as such, no. I'm just such a keen reader that I want to see tomorrow's news today. And Mr. De Word seems to have a knack for finding things out. Angua, I want to stop these stupid people fighting so that we can all go home, and if that means allowing the occasional pigeon to have a crap on my desk, so be it."
"Oh, sorry, sir, I didn't notice. I expect it'll wipe off."
"Go and get Reg to find some rabbit for the buzzard, will you?"
When she'd gone, Vimes carefully unscrewed the end of the tube and pulled out a roll of very thin paper. He unfolded it, smoothed it out, and read the tiny writing, smiling as he did so. Then he turned the paper over and looked at the picture. He was still staring at it when Angua returned with Reg and half a bucket of crunchy rabbit bits. "Anything interesting, sir?" said Angua, ingenuously.
"Well, yes, you could say that. All plans are changed, all bets are off. Oh, Mr. De Word, you poor fool."
He handed her the paper. She read the story carefully.
"Good for them, sir," she said. "Most of them look 15 years old, and when you see the size of those dragoons, well, you've got to be impressed."
"Yes, yes, you could say that, you could say that," said Vimes,
his face gleaming like a man with a joke to share.
"Tell me, did De Word interview any Borogravian high-ups when he arrived?"
"No, sir. I understand he was turned away. They don't really know what a reporter is, so I gathered the adjutant threw him out and said he was a nuisance."
"Dear me, the poor man," said Vimes, still grinning. "You met Prince Heinrich the other day. Describe him to me."
Angua cleared her throat.
"Well, sir, he was largely green, shading to blue, with overtones of grrrls and a trail of—"
"I meant describe him to me on the assumption that I'm not a werewolf who sees with his nose," said Vimes.
"Oh, yes," said Angua. "Sorry, sir. 6'2", 180 pounds, fair hair, green-blue eyes, sabre scar on his left cheek, wears a monocle in his right eye, waxed moustache."
"Good. Well observed. And now look at Captain Horrentz in the picture, will you?"
She looked again and said, very quietly, "Oh, dear. They didn't know."
"He wasn't going to tell him, was he?"
"Would they have seen a picture?" Angua shrugged.
"I doubt it, sir. I mean, where would they see it? There's never been a newspaper here until the Times carts turned up last week."
"Some woodcut, maybe?"
"No, they're an abomination, unless they're of the Duchess."
"So they really didn't know. And De Word has never seen him," said Vimes. "But you saw him when we arrived the other day. What did you think of him, just between ourselves?"
"An arrogant son of a bitch, sir, and I know what I'm talking about. The kind of man who thinks he knows what a woman likes, and it's himself. All very friendly, right up until they say no."
"Stupid?"
"I don't think so, but not as clever as he thinks he is."
"Right. because he didn't tell our writer friend his real name. Did you read the bit at the end?
Angua read at the end of the text. Perry, the captain threatened and harangued me after the recruits had gone. Alas, I had no time to fish for the manacle key in the privy. Please let the prince know where they are soonest. W.D.W.
Looks like William didn't take to him either, she said. I wonder why the prince was out with a scouting party.
You said he was an arrogant son of a bitch, said Vimes. Maybe he just wanted to pop across and see if his aunt was still breathing.
His voice trailed off. Angua looked at Vimes's face, which was staring through her. She knew her boss. He thought war was simply another crime, like murder. He didn't much like people with titles, and regarded being a duke as a job description rather than a lever to greatness. He had an odd sense of humour, and he had a sense for what she thought of as harbingers, those little straws in the wind that said there was a storm coming.
In the nuddy, he chuckled. Could have slit their throats. Didn't. They took their boots away and left them to hop home in the nude.
The squad, it seemed, had found a friend. She waited.
I feel sorry for the Borogravians, he said.
Me too, sir, said Angua.
Oh, why?
Their religion's gone bad on them. Have you seen the latest abominations? They abominate the smell of beets and people with red hair. In rather shaky writing, sir. And root vegetables are a staple here. 3 years ago, it was abominable to grow root crops on ground which had grown grain or peas.
Vimes looked blank, and she remembered that he was a city boy.
It means no real crop rotation, sir, she explained. The ground sours. Diseases build up. You were right when you said they were going mad. These commandments are dumb, and any farmer can see that. I imagine people go along with them as best they can, but sooner or later you either have to break them and feel guilty, or keep them and suffer. For no reason, sir. I've had a look around. They're very religious here, but their gods let them down. No wonder they mostly pray to their royal family.
She watched him stare at the piece of pigeon post for a while, then he said, "How far is it to Plots?"
"About 50 miles, said Angua, adding, "As the wolf runs, maybe 6 hours. I can leave right away.
Good. Buggy'll keep an eye on you. Little Henry is going to hop home, or meet one of his patrols, or an enemy patrol, whatever. But the mitten is going to hit the windmill when everyone sees that picture. I bet de Word would have let him out if he'd been nice and polite. That'll teach him to meddle with the awesome power of a fair and free press."
He sat upright and rubbed his hands together like a man who meant business.
"Now, let's get that pigeon on its way again before it gets missed, eh? Get Reg to lurch along to where the Times people are staying and tell them their pigeon flew in the wrong window. Again."
That was a good time, Polly remembered. They didn't go down to the river docks. They could see there was no boat there. They hadn't turned up, and the boatman had left without them. Instead, they crossed the bridge and headed up into the forests, with Blouse leading the way on his ancient horse. Maledict went on ahead, and Jade brought up the rear. You didn't need a light at night when a vampire led the way, and a troll at the rear would certainly discourage hangers-on. No one mentioned the boat. No one spoke at all. The thing was, Polly realized, that they were no longer marching alone. They shared the secret. That was a huge relief, and right now they didn't need to talk about it. Nevertheless, it was probably a good idea to keep up a regular output of farts, belches, nose-pickings and groin-scratchings just in case. Polly didn't know whether to be proud that they'd taken her for a boy. I mean, she thought, I'd worked hard to get it right. I mastered the walk. Except, I suppose, what I really did was mistress the walk. I invented the fake shaving routine, and the others didn't even think of that. I haven't cleaned my fingernails for days, and I pride myself on being able to belch with the best of them. So, I mean, I was trying. It was just slightly annoying to find that she'd succeeded so well. After a few hours of this, when true dawn was breaking, they smelled smoke. There was a faint pall of it among the trees. Lieutenant Blouse raised a hand for them to halt, and Jackram joined him in whispered conversation. Polly stepped forward.
"Permission to whisper too, Sarge. I think I know what this is."
Jackram and Blouse stared at her. Then the sergeant said,
"All right, Perks, go and find out if you're right, then.
That was an aspect that hadn't occurred to Polly, but she'd left herself open. Jackram relented when he saw her expression, nodded to Maledict and said, "Go with him, Corporal." They left the squad behind and walked forward carefully, over the beds of new fallen leaves. The smoke was heavy and fragrant, and above all, reminiscent. Polly headed to where thicker undergrowth was taking advantage of the extra light of a clearing, and pushed through into an airy thicket of hazel trees. The smoke was denser here, and barely moving. The thicket ended. A few yards away, in a wide patch of cleared ground, a mound, like a small volcano, was spewing flame and smoke into the air.
"Charcoal oven," whispered Polly. "Just clay, plastered on a stack of hazel. Should sit there smouldering for days. The wind probably caught it last night, and the fire's broken out. Won't make good charcoal now. It's burning too fast."
They edged around it, keeping to the bushes. Other clay domes were dotted around the clearing, with faint wisps of steam and smoke coming from their tops. There were a couple of ovens in the process of being built, the fresh clay stacked alongside some bundles of hazel sticks. There was a hut, and the domes, and nothing else but silence, apart from the crackle of the runaway fire.
"The charcoal burner's dead, or nearly dead," said Polly.
"He's dead," said Maledict. "There is a smell of death here."
"You can smell it above the smoke."
"Sure," said Maledict. "Something's very good at smelling. But how did you know?"
"They watch the burns like hawks," said Polly, staring at the hut. "He wouldn't let it go out of control like that if he was alive. Is he in the hut?"
"They are in the hut," said Maledict flatly.
He set off across the smoky ground. Polly ran after him.
"Man and woman," she said. "Their wives often live out with—"
"Can't tell, not if they're old," said Maledict shortly. The hut was only a temporary thing, made of woven hazel and roofed with tarpaulin.
The charcoal burners moved around a lot, from coppice to coppice. It didn't have windows, but it did have a doorway, with a rag for a door. The rag had been pulled away. The doorway was dark. "I've got to be a man about this," she thought. There was a woman on the bed, and a man lying on the floor. There were other details which the eyes saw but the brain did not focus on. There was a great deal of blood. The couple had been old. They would not grow older. Back outside, Polly took frantic mouthfuls of air.
"Do you think those cavalry men did it?" she said at last, and then realized that Maledict was shaking. "Oh, the blood," she said.
"I can deal with it. It's okay. I just have to get my mind right. It's okay."
He leaned against the hut, breathing heavily.
"Okay, I'm fine," he said. "And I can't smell horses. Why don't you use your eyes? Nice, soft mud everywhere after the rain, but no hoof prints. Plenty of footprints, though. We did it."
"Don't be silly. We were—"
The vampire had reached down and pulled something out of the fallen leaves. He rubbed the mud off it with a thumb. In thin, pressed brass, it was the flaming cheese badge of the ins and outs.
"But I thought we were the good guys," said Polly weakly. "If we were guys, I mean."
"I think I need a coffee," said the vampire.
"Deserters," said Sergeant Jackram 10 minutes later. "It happens."
He tossed the badge into the fire.
"But they were on our side," said Shufti.
"So? Not everyone's a nice gentleman like you, Private Manacle," said Jackram. "Not after a few years of getting shot at and eating rat scubbo. On the retreat from Krusk, I had no water for 3 days, and then fell on my face in a puddle of horse piss. A circumstance which did nothing for my feelings or goodwill toward my fellow man or horse. Something the matter, Corporal?"
Maledict was on his knees, going through his pack with a distracted air.
"My cough is gone, Sarge." "Should have packed it properly, then," said Jackram, unsympathetically. "I did, Sarge. I washed out the engine and packed it up with the beanbag after supper last night. I know I did. I don't take coffee lightly." "If someone else did, they're going to wish I'd never been born," growled Jackram, looking around at the rest of the squad. "Anyone else lost anything?"
I wasn't going to say anything, because I wasn't sure," Shufti volunteered. "But my stuff looked as if it had been pulled about when I opened my pack just now."
"Oh-ho," said Jackram. "Well, well, well. I'll say this once, lads. Pinching from your mates is a hanging offence, understood? Nothing breaks down morale faster than some sneaky little sod dipping into people's packs. and if I find out someone's been at it, I'll swing on their heels. He glared at the squad. I ain't going to demand that you all empty out your packs as if you's criminals, he said, but you'd better check that nothing's missing. Of course, one of you might have packed something that wasn't theirs by accident, okay? Packing in a rush, poor light, easy to do. In which case, you sort it out amongst yourselves, understand? Now I'm off to have a shave. Lieutenant Blouse is having a throw-up behind the shelter after a viewing of the corpses, poor chap. Polly rummaged desperately in her pack. She'd thrown things in any old how last night, but what she was frantically searching for was not there. Despite the heat from the charcoal mounds, she shivered. The ringlets had gone. Feverishly, she tried to remember the events of yesterday evening. They'd just dumped their packs as soon as they were in the barracks, right? And Maledict had made himself some coffee at supper time. He'd washed and dried the little machine. There was a thin little wail. Wazza, the meagre contents of her pack spread around her, held up the coffee engine. It had been stamped almost flat.
Boop, 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 boop,
she began. Polly's mind worked faster, like a mill wheel in a flood. Then everyone took their packs into the back room with all the mattresses, didn't they? And so they'd still be there when the squad fought the troopers.
Oh, what? Said Shufti. Oh, dear.
So who might have sneaked in through the back door? There was no one around except the squad and the cavalrymen. Perhaps someone wanted to watch and cause a little trouble on the way.
Strappy, she said aloud. It must have been him. The little weasel ran into the cavalry and then snuck back to watch. He was damn well going through our packs out the back. Oh, come on, she added as they stared at her. Can you see Wazza stealing from anyone? Anyway, when did she have the chance?
Wouldn't they have taken him prisoner? Said Tonka,
staring at the crushed machine in Wazza's shaking hands. If he'd whipped off his shako and jacket, he'd be just another stupid civilian, wouldn't he? Or he could say he was a deserter. He could make up some story, said Polly. You know how he was with Wazza. He went through my pack, too. Stole something of mine.
What was it?
Said Shufti.
Just something, okay? He just wanted to make trouble.
She watched them, thinking.
Sounds convincing, said Maledict, nodding abruptly. Little weasel. Okay, was. Just fish out the beans, and I'll do the best I can.
There's no...
Maledict put a hand over his eyes.
No beans?
He said.
Please, has anyone got the beans?
There was a general rummaging and a general lack of a result.
No beans, moaned Maledict. He threw away the beans. Come on, lads, we've got to get the sentries posted, said Jackram, approaching. Sorted it all out, have you?
Yes, Sarge. Oz thinks,
Shufti began. It was all a bit of a mispacking, Sarge, said Polly quickly, anxious to keep away from anything connected with missing ringlets. Nothing to worry about. All sorted, Sarge. No problem. Nothing to worry anyone. Not a thing, Sarge. Jackram looked from the startled squad to Polly, and back again. She felt his gaze bore into her, daring her to change her expression of mad, tense honesty.
Yes, he said slowly. Right. Sorted out, eh? Well done, Perks. Attention! Officer present.
Yes, yes, Sergeant, thank you. But I don't think we need to be too formal, said Blouse, who looked rather pale. A word with you when you have finished, if you please. And I think we should bury the, bodies.
Jackram saluted.
Right you are, sir. Two volunteers to dig a grave for those poor souls. Goom and Toot. What's he doing?
Lofty was over by the blazing charcoal oven. She was holding a burning branch a foot or two from her face and turning it this way and that, watching the flames.
I'll do it, Sarge,
said Tonka, stepping beside Wazza.
What are you, married? Said Jackram. You are on guard, Holter. I doubt whoever did it'll come back, but if they do, you sing out, right? You and Igor come with me, and I'll show you your stations.
No coffee, moaned Maledict.
Foul muck anyway, said Jackram, walking away. A cup of hot sweet tea is the soldier's friend.
Polly grabbed the kettle for Blouse's shaving water and hurried away. That was another thing you learned in the military. Look busy. Look busy,
and no one worried too much about what you were busy at.
Bloody, bloody Strappy. He'd got her hair. He'd try and use it against her if he could, that was certain. That'd be his style. What would he do now?
Well, he'd want to keep away from Jackram, that'd be another certainty. He'd wait somewhere. She'd have to, too.
The squad had made camp upwind of the smoke. It was supposed to be a rest stop, since no one had got much sleep last night. But as Jackram handed out tasks, he reminded them,
"There is an old military saying which is, hard luck for you."
There was no question of using the woven hut, but there were a few tarpaulin-covered frames built to keep the coppiced wood dry. Those not given jobs to do lay down on the stacked piles of twigs, which were yielding and didn't smell, and were, in any case, better than the inhabited palliasses back at the barracks. Blouse, as an officer, had a shelter to himself. Polly had stacked bundles of twigs to make a chair that was at least springy. Now she laid out his shaving things and turned to go.
"Could you shave me, Perks?" said the lieutenant.
Fortunately, Polly's back was turned, and he didn't see her expression.
"This damn hand is quite swollen, I'm afraid," Blouse went on. "I would not normally ask, but..."
"Yes, of course, sir," said Polly, because there was no alternative. Well, now, let's see. She'd got quite good at scraping a blunt razor across a face bare of hair, yes. Oh, and she'd shaved a few dead pigs in the kitchens at the Duchess. But that was only because nobody likes hairy bacon. They didn't really count, did they? Panic rose, and rose faster at the sight of Jackram approaching. She was going to cut an officer's throat in the presence of a sergeant.
Well, when in doubt, bustle. Military rule. Bustle and hope there's a surprise attack.
"Are you not being a little strict with the men, sergeant?" said Blouse, as Polly flapped a towel around his neck.
"Not, sir. Keep 'em occupied, that's the bunny. Otherwise they'll mope," said Jackram confidently.
"Yes, but they have just seen a couple of badly mutilated bodies," said Blouse, and shuddered.
"Good practice for them, sir. They'll see plenty more."
Polly turned to the shaving gear she'd laid out on a towel. Let's see. Cutthroat razor, oh dear. The grey stone for coarse sharpening, the red stone for fine sharpening, the soap, the brush, the bowl. Well, at least she knew how to make foam.
"Deserters, sergeant. Bad business," Blouse went on. "You always get 'em, sir. That's why the pay is always late. Walking away from 3 months' back pay makes a man think twice."
"Mr. De Word, the newspaper man, said there had been a great many desertions, sergeant. It is very strange that so many men would desert from a winning side." Polly whirled the brush vigorously. Jackram, for the first time since Maledict had joined, looked uncomfortable.
"But whose side's he on, sir?" he said.
"Sergeant, I am sure you are not a stupid man," said Blouse, as behind him foam poured over the edge of the bowl and flopped onto the floor. "There are desperate deserters abroad. Our borders appear to be sufficiently unguarded that enemy cavalry operate 40 miles inside our fair country. And High Command appears to be so desperate, yes, desperate, sergeant, that even half a dozen untrained and frankly very young men must go to the front." The foam had a life of its own now. Polly hesitated.
"Hot towel first, please, Parks," said Blouse.
"Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. Forgot, sir," said Polly, panic rising. She had a vague recollection of walking past the barber shop in months. Hot towel on face, right. She grabbed a small towel, tipped boiling water onto it, wrung it out, and dropped it on the lieutenant's face. He did not actually scream as such.
"Something else worries me, sergeant."
"Yes, sir."
"The cavalry must have apprehended Corporal Strappy. I cannot see how else they found out about our men."
"Good thinking, sir,"
said the sergeant, watching Polly apply the lather across Blouse's mouth and nose.
"I do hope they didn't torture the poor man," said the lieutenant.
Jackram was silent on that issue, but meaningfully so. Polly wished he wouldn't keep glancing at her.
"But why would a deserter head straight for the front?" said Blouse.
"Makes sense, sir, for an old soldier, especially a political."
"Really?"
"Trust me on that, sir," said Jackram.
Behind Blouse, Polly brushed the razor up and down the red stone. It was already as slick as ice.
"But our boys, sergeant, are not old soldiers. It takes 2 weeks to turn a recruit into a fighting man.
said the lieutenant. "They're promising material, sir. I could do it in a couple of days, sir," said Jackram. "Perks?" Polly nearly sliced her thumb off.
"Yes, Sarge?"
she quavered. "Do you think you could kill a man today?" Polly glanced at the razor. The edge glowed.
"I'm sorry to say I think I could, sir."
"There you have it, sir," said Jackram with a lopsided grin. "There's something about these lads, sir. They're quick." He walked behind Blouse, took the razor from Polly's grateful hand without a word, and said, "There's a few matters we ought to discuss, sir, private-like. I think Perks here ought to get some rest."
"Of course, Sergeant. Pardon les soldats jeunes, eh?"
"And them too, sir," said Jackram. "You're dismissed, Perks." Polly walked away, her right hand still trembling. Behind her, she heard Blouse sigh and say, "These are tricky times, Sergeant. Command has never been so burdensome." "The great General Tacticus says that in dangerous times, the commander must be like the eagle and see the whole, yet still be like the hawk and see every detail."
"Yes, sir," said Jackram, gliding the razor down a cheek. "And if he acts like a common tit, sir, he can hang upside down all day and eat fat bacon."
Well said, Sergeant.
The charcoal burner and his wife were buried to the accompaniment of, to Polly's lack of surprise, a small prayer from Wazza. It asked the Duchess to intercede with the god Nuggan to give eternal rest and similar items to the departed. Polly had heard it many times before. She'd wondered how the process worked. She'd never prayed since the day the bird burned, not even when her mother was dying. A god that burned painted birds would not save a mother. A god like that was not worth a prayer. But Wazza prayed for everyone. Wazza prayed like a child, eyes screwed up and hands clenched until they were white. The reedy little voice trembled with such belief that Polly felt embarrassed, and then ashamed, and finally, after the ringing Amen, amazed that the world appeared no different than before. For a minute or two, it had been a better place. There was a cat in the hut. It cowered under the crude bed and spat at anyone who came close.
"All the food's been taken, but there's carrots and parsnips in a little garden down the hill a bit," Shufti said as they walked away.
"It'd be stealing from the dead," said Wazza.
"Well, if they object, they can hold on, can't they?" said Shufti. "They're underground already."
For some reason that was, at this time, funny. They'd have laughed at anything. Now there was Jade, Lofty, Shufti, and Polly. Everyone else was on guard duty. They sat by a fire, on which a small pot seethed. Lofty tended the fire. She always seemed more animated near a fire, Polly noticed.
"I'm doing horse scubble for the Rupert," said Shufti,
easily dropping into a slang learned all of 20 hours ago.
"He specifically asked for it. Got lots of dry horse jerky from Three Parts, but Tonka says she can knock over some pheasants while she's on duty."
"I hope she spends some time watching for enemies too," said Polly.
"She'll be careful," said Lofty,
prodding the fire with a stick.
"You know, if we're found out, we'll be beaten and sent back," said Shufti.
"Oh, boy," said Polly.
So suddenly she surprised herself.
"By whom? Who's going to try out here? Who cares out here?"
"Well, wearing men's clothes is an abomination unto Nuggan."
"Why?"
"It just is," said Shufti firmly.
"But..."
"You're wearing them?" said Polly.
"Well, it was the only way," said Shufti, "and I tried them on, and they didn't seem all that abominable to me."
"Have you noticed the men talk to you differently?" said Lofty, shyly.
"Talk?" said Polly. "They listen to you differently, too."
"They don't keep looking at you all the time," said Shufti. "You know what I mean? You're just another person. If a girl walked down the street wearing a sword, a man would try to take it off her."
"We're trolls. We ain't allowed to carry clubs," said Jade. "Only large rocks. And it ain't right for a girl to wear lichen, because the boys say bald is modest. Had to rub bird doings in my head to grow this lot."
That was quite a long speech for a troll.
"We didn't know that," said Polly.
Trolls all look the same to us, more or less."
"I'm naturally craggy," said Jade. "I don't see why I should polish."
"There is a difference," said Shufti. "I think it's the socks. It's like they pull you forward all the time. It's like the whole world spins around your socks."
She sighed.
and looked at the horse meat, which had been boiled almost white.
"It's done," she said. "You'd better go and give it to the Rupert, Polly. I mean, Ozza. I told the Sarge I could do something better, but he said the lieutenant said how good it was last night."
A small wild turkey, a brace of pheasants, and a couple of rabbits, all tied together, landed in front of Shufti.
"Good job we were guarding you, eh?"
said Tonka, grinning and wearing an empty sling around in one hand.
"One rock, one lunch.
Maledict's staying on guard. He said he'll smell anyone before they see him, and he's too edgy to eat. What can you do with that lot?"
"Casserole of game," said Shufti firmly. "We've got the veg, and I've still got half an onion."
A woman always has half an onion left over, no matter what the size of the onion, the dish, or the woman.
"I'm sure I can make an oven out of one of those—"
"On your feet, attention!"
snapped the silently moving Jackram behind them. He stood back with a faint smile on his face as they scrambled to their feet.
"Private Halter, I must have bleeding amazing eyesight," he said when they were approximately upright.
"Yes, Sarge,"
said Tonka, staring straight ahead.
"Can you guess why, Private Halter?"
"No, Sarge."
"It's because I knows you are on perimeter guard, Halter, but I can see you as clear as if you were standing right here in front of me, Halter. Can't I, Halter?"
"Yes, Sarge."
"It's just as well you are still on perimeter duty, Halter, because the penalty for absenting yourself from your post in time of war is death, Halter."
"I only—"
"No onlys. I don't want to hear no onlys. I don't want you to think that I am a shouty man, Halter. Corporal Strappy was a shouty man, but he was a damn political. Upon my oath, I am not a shouty man, but if you ain't back at your post inside of 30 seconds, I'll rip your tongue out."
Tonka fled. Sergeant Jackram cleared his throat and continued in a level voice.
"This, my lads, is what we call a real orientation lecture. Not one of the fancy political ones like Strappy gave you."
He cleared his throat again.
"The purpose of this lecture is to let you know where we are. We are in the deep cack. It couldn't be worse if it was raining arseholes. Any questions?"
Since there were none from the bemused recruits, he continued, while beginning a slow stroll around the squad.
"We know enemy forces are in the area. Currently they have no boots. But there will be others with boots aplenty. Also, there may be deserters in the area. They will not be nice people. They will be impolite. Therefore, Lieutenant Blouse has decreed that we will travel off the roads and by night. Yes, we have met the enemy, and we have prevailed. That was a fluke. They weren't expecting you to be rough, tough soldiers. Nor were you, so I don't want you to feel cocky about it."
He leaned forward until his face was inches from Polly's.
"Are you feeling cocky, Private Perks?"
"No, Sarge."
"Good. Good." Jackram stepped back. "We are heading for the front, lads. The war. And in a nasty war, where's the best place to be? Apart from on the moon, of course. No one?"
Slowly, Jade raised a hand.
"Go on, then," said the sergeant.
"In the army, Sarge,"
said the troll.
"'Cause?"
She began to count on her fingers.
"One, you got weapons and armour and debt. Two, you are surrounded by other armed men. Many, you's getting paid and getting better grub than the people in civilian street. Lots, if and you gives up, you getting taken prisoner, and there's rules about that, like not kicking prisoners in her head and stuff, 'cause if you kick their prisoners in her head, they'll kick your prisoners in her head. So that's like you're kicking your own head. But there's no rule says you can't kick enemy civilians in her head. There's other stuff too, but I ran out of numbers."
She gave them a diamond grin.
"We may be slow, but we ain't stupid," she added.
"I am impressed, Private," said Jackram. "And you are right. The only wasp in the jam is that you ain't soldiers. But I can help you there. Being a soldier is not hard. If it was, soldiers would not be able to do it. There is only three things you need to remember, which are, viz. One, obey orders. Two, give it to the enemy good and hard. 3, don't die. Got that? Right. You're nearly there. Well done. I propose to assist you in the execution of all 3. You are my little lads, and I will look after you. In the meantime, you've got duties. Shufti, get cooking. Private Perks, see to the Rupert. And after that, practice your shaving. I will now visit those on guard and deliver unto them the holy word. Dismissed.
They remained at something like attention until he was probably out of earshot, and then sagged.
"Why does he always shout?" said Shufti. "I mean, he only has to ask."
Polly appended the horrible scubbo into a tin bowl and almost ran to the lieutenant's shelter. He looked up from a map and smiled at her as if she was delivering a feast.
"Ah, scubbo," he said.
"We are actually having other stuff, sir," Polly volunteered. "I'm sure there's enough to go round."
"Good heavens, no. No, it's been years since I've had food like this," said Blouse, picking up the spoon. "Of course, at school we didn't appreciate it so much."
"You had food like this at school, sir?" said Polly.
"Yes, most days," said Blouse happily.
Polly couldn't quite fit this in her head. Blouse was a knob. Knobs ate knobby food, didn't they?
"Had you done something bad, sir?"
"I can't imagine what you mean, Perks," said Blouse, slurping at the horrible thin gruel.
"Are the men rested?"
"Yes, sir. The dead people were a bit of a shock."
"Yes, bad business," sighed the lieutenant.
"Such is war, alas. I'm only sorry you had to learn so fast. Such a terrible waste all the time. I'm sure things can be sorted out when we reach Connect, though. No general can expect young men like yourselves to be instant soldiers. I shall have something to say about that." His rabbity features looked unusually determined, as if a hamster had spotted a gap in its treadmill.
"Do you require me for anything else, sir?" said Polly. Do the men talk about me, Perks?"
"Not really, sir, no." The lieutenant looked disappointed.
"Oh. Oh, well. Thank you, Perks."
Polly wondered if Jackram ever slept. She did a spell of guard duty, and he stepped out from behind her with,
"Guess who, Perks? You're on lookout. You should see the dreadful enemy before they see you. What are the 4 S's?"
"Shape, shadow, silhouette, and shine, Sarge," said Polly, snapping to attention. She'd been expecting this.
That caused a moment's pause from the sergeant before he said,
"Just knew that, did you?"
"No, sir. A little bird told me when we changed guard, sir. Said you'd asked him, sir."
"Oh, so Jackram's little lads are ganging up on their kindly old sergeant, are they?" said Jackram.
"No, sir. Sharing information important to the squad in a vital survival situation, Sarge."
"You've got a quick mouth on you, Perks, I'll grant you that."
"Thank you, Sarge."
"But I see you're not standing in a bleeding shadow, Perks. Nor have you done anything to change your bleeding shape. You're silhouetted against the bleeding light, and your sabre's shining like a diamond in a chimney sweep's bleeding air all. Explain."
"It's because of the one C, Sarge," said Polly, still staring straight ahead.
"And that is?"
"Colour, Sarge. I'm wearing bleeding red and white in a bleeding grey forest, Sarge."
She risked a sideways glance. In Jackram's little piggy eyes there gleamed a gleam. It was the one they had when he was secretly pleased.
"Ashamed of your lovely, lovely uniform, Perks?" he said.
"Don't want to be seen dead in it, Sarge," said Polly.
"Ha! As you were, Perks."
Polly smiled straight ahead. When she came off guard for a bowl of game casserole, Jackram was teaching basic sword craft to Lofty and Tonka, using hazel sticks as swords. By the time Polly had finished, he was teaching Wazza some of the finer points of using a high-performance pistol crossbow. Especially the one about not turning around with it cocked and saying,
"Whoa, what's this bit for, Sarge?"
Wazza handled weapons like a house-proud woman disposing of a dead mouse, at arm's length and trying not to look. But even she was better with them than Igor, who just didn't seem at home with the idea of what was, to him, randomized surgery. Jade was dozing. Maledict was hanging by his knees under the roof of one of the sheds, with his arms folded across his chest. He must have been telling the truth when he said that there were some aspects of being a vampire that were hard to give up. Igor and Maledict. She still wasn't sure about Maledict, but Igor had to be a boy with those stitches around the head, and that face that could only be called homely. And even then it was the kind of home that has a burned-out vehicle on the lawn. He was quiet and neat, but maybe that's how Igor's behaved. She woke up with Shufti shaking her.
We're moving. Better go and see to the Rupert.
What? Oh, right. There was a bustle all around her. Polly staggered to her feet and hurried over to Lieutenant Blouse's shed, where he was standing in front of his wretched horse and holding the bridle with a lost expression.
Ah, Perks, he said. I'm not at all sure I'm doing this right.
No, sir. You've got the waffles twisted and the snuffles are upside down, said Polly, who'd often helped in the inn's yard.
Ah, that would be why he was so difficult last night, said Blouse. I suppose I ought to know this sort of thing, but at home we had a man to do it.
Let me, sir, said Polly. She untwisted the bridle with a few careful movements. What's his name, sir?
Thalacephalos, said Blouse sheepishly. That was the legendary stallion of General Tacticus, you know.
I didn't know that, sir, said Polly. She leaned back and glanced between the horse's rear legs. Wow. Blouse really was short-sighted, wasn't he? The mare looked at her partly with its eyes, which were small and evil, but mostly with its yellowing teeth, of which it had an enormous amount. She had the impression that it was thinking about sniggering.
"I'll hold him for you while you mount, sir," she said. "Thank you. He certainly moves about a bit when I try."
"I expect he does, sir," said Polly. She knew about difficult horses. This one had all the hallmarks of a right bastard, one of those not cowed at all by the obvious superiority of the human race. The mare eyeballed and yellow-toothed her as Blouse mounted, but Polly had positioned herself carefully away from the uprights of the shelter. Thalacephalos wasn't the sort to buck and kick. She was the sneaky kind, Polly could see, the sort that stepped on your foot. She moved her foot just as the hoof came down, but Thalacephalos, angry at being thwarted, turned, twisted, lowered her head, and bit Polly sharply on the rolled-up socks.
"Bad horse," said Blouse severely. "Sorry about that, Perks. I think he's anxious to get to the fray. Oh, my word!" he added, looking down. "Are you all right, Perks?"
"Well, he's pulling a bit, sir," said Polly, being dragged sideways. Blouse had gone white again.
"But he's bitten. He's caught you by the, right on the—"
The penny dropped. Polly looked down and hastily remembered what she'd heard during numerous rule-free bar fights.
"Oh! Ah! Oh! Ah! Blimey! Right in a fruit! Ow!"
she lamented, and then, since it seemed a good idea at the time, brought both fists down heavily on the mare's nose. The lieutenant fainted. It took some time to bring Blouse round, but at least it gave Polly time to think. He opened his eyes and focused on her.
You fell off your horse, sir, Polly volunteered. Perks? Are you all right? Dear boy, he had you by the...
Only needs a few stitches, sir, said Polly cheerfully.
What? From Igor?
No, sir. Just the cloth, sir, said Polly. The trousers are a bit big for me, sir.
Ah, right. Too big, eh? Phew, eh? Ha, near miss there, eh? Well, I mustn't lie around here all day.
The squad helped him on to Thalacephalos, who was still sniggering unrepentantly. On the subject of too big, Polly made a mental note to see about his jacket next time they stopped. She wasn't much good with the needle, but if Igor couldn't do something to make it look better, then he wasn't the man she thought he was. And that was a sentence that begged a question.